Happy holidays. The holidays are the perfect time to talk about family, but perhaps not for the reasons that you think. Many of us enjoy this time of year, surrounded by people we love, forming happy memories to compound upon a lifetime of predominantly happy memories. But as you know, that isn't everyone's experience. In addition to the loss and sadness that all humans experience at times, for some people, the holidays are a time of continued seclusion, depression, and everywhere they look, reminders of the happy family that they don't have, the family that they long to find. For many people, including children right here in our own communities, time spent with family doesn't automatically mean safety or the creation of happy, healthy memories. I'd like to share with you what I see as different categories of family, and when we expand our definition in this way, it opens up all sorts of possibilities for finding happiness in new places. As the hymn said, there is more love somewhere. Three unique categories of family include the family we have, which is our parents and siblings, the family we form if we choose a partner and have children, and then there's the family we find. This third category is what I'd like to focus on this morning, family we have the good fortune to find. You have found family here in your church community. We often find family in the form of neighbors and lifelong friends. Since we were young children, my siblings and I called a dear friend of our mother's, Aunt. She was family we found, or perhaps she found us. This idea of people finding each other is at the heart of why I'm here today, to speak on finding new family through fostering. I'm the youngest of four children, each of us born 1 year after the next. When I was a young toddler in the early 70s, my parents took in an African-American teenage girl who was, temporarily at least, hiding her pregnancy from her parents. Then my aunt lived with us. She was young and going to school and needed a place to stay. Then another woman stayed with us. She was unmarried, pregnant, and needed a place to live. All of this while my parents had four young children of their own, well under the age of eight. They spent the next few decades welcoming others into our home, despite not having much to give other than a home-cooked meal, love, good conversation, and space to sleep. So growing up, my parents defined family for me as whoever needed us at the time. These people, indeed some were strangers, were welcome in our home as long as they needed us. Didn't matter how long we wanted them to stay, it mattered how long they needed us. While none of these individuals were under the state's care, this is the definition of fostering. So fast forward nearly 50 years, and one evening my husband says to me, "We should become foster parents." I was quite shocked when he said it. We had never once talked about it before. But my response was, well, okay, because this idea of fostering meshed with the definition of family that I had been raised with, the definition I had been taught, not on paper, certainly not lectured verbally, but a lesson I witnessed in my upbringing. I feel honored to have grown up with parents who have that mentality and love for strangers, love for God, and love for their community. They taught me that no matter how little we have, we have so much more than so many others have. My biological children, twin daughters Rachel and Emily, are here with us today. It didn't take them long to realize how incredibly blessed they are compared to some of the children that we've cared for by fostering. There's baby B, who at 6 months old had four unexplained rib and leg fractures. Sweet L, the well-spoken and best-mannered three-year-old I have ever met, who thought potty training meant having her legs beaten every time she had a potty accident. Big M, who I quickly learned runs faster than me. He was very well behaved at home, but every time we left the house, he would bolt, I'm sure terrified of where he was going next. Little A, a precious three-year-old who could speak, but was so traumatized by being separated from her parents and her siblings that she temporarily couldn't find her words. Brothers D and J, the 3.5-year-old responsible for his barely 2-year-old brother for several hours outside. These children are real, Like other children in foster care, they were scared, lonely, hurting. They're also precious, beautiful, smart, and resourceful. Children in foster care need affection and positive attention from an adult who's capable of showing them what a healthy, loving relationship looks like, what it feels like. They need to understand that their future can be different from their past, and they need to learn that some people are worthy of their trust. When we expand our idea of family into this larger idea of community, we can affect real change. It takes each of us being able to recognize the unique gifts that God has given us and using those gifts to improve our lives and improve the lives of those around us. This is a core Unitarian Universalist principle, correct? When we use those gifts to find new family or allow ourselves to be open to the idea of letting family find us, to find safe and healthy relationships, positive role models, to have us treat them as family, even temporarily, that's when real magic can happen in our hearts, in our lives, and then as critically needed in the larger community. Did you know that a lot of kids who grow up in foster care become foster parents themselves? To me, that's just incredible. It's also true that a lot of people who used to be in foster care have children who end up in the system. But we can break that cycle if members of society step up in each local community and help these children. We can break those cycles. My goal today is not to recruit you all to become foster parents, although I hope a few of you might consider it. My goal is that you leave here today and begin the year 2020 with an open mind toward community, toward finding new family, to helping meet the needs of so many young children, some in this very neighborhood where we're gathered. Some shocking statistics. One child enters foster care every 2 minutes in the United States. That's about 6 new scared, hurting, confused, traumatized children since I began speaking. There are approximately 450,000 children in foster care in the United States right now. In South Carolina, we have more than 4,500 kids in care. More than 500 of those are in Richland County alone. To meet the current need of foster homes, Lexington and Richland counties combined need about 200 additional homes. What it means when there aren't enough homes is that existing foster families get overcrowded. They can't do a good job with each of the children in their care. Remember, these kids need a lot of emotional support, one-on-one time, medical care. Many are reading well below grade level, 3- and 4-year-olds who aren't potty trained, undiagnosed learning disabilities. Such a problem in South Carolina that we're losing foster families at an equal rate that we're gaining them. There is a desperate need right now, in particular, for families willing to take in teenagers and willing to take in sibling sets. Siblings who are able to stay together in foster care are often less traumatized than those separated from their parents and siblings on the same day. So finding 200 more foster homes seems like an insurmountable number, but let me put it this way. The need could be met if 1 out of every 3 churches produced 1 foster home. 1/3 of our churches produce 1 new foster home, the need would be met in our state. That seems doable. Another result of the shortage of foster homes is that teens who DSS can't find a home for, if they have any history of trouble or being a runaway, they're sent to juvie just for the meal, the warm bed, and the meals and the roof over their head. Is that really the best place for these kids to get back on track? So just last week, during our family Christmas celebration, my siblings and parents were there to witness it. The 11-month-old baby girl who we're fostering now took her first 2 steps. I was brought to tears. It's a big milestone. It was a combination of, in my heart, the reason for my tears, and that was, of course, celebrating that incredible accomplishment, but also it represented yet another milestone that her parents missed. Like her first bite of table food, her first word, her first Halloween costume. She spent her first Thanksgiving with us. And this week, of course, woke up on Christmas morning with us, her temporary family, not her parents. Selfishly, I really love setting a place at the dinner table for her every night, and also for all of the 8 other children who we have fostered in the past few years. But each of those meals represents a meal that they're not eating with their family, with their birth family. Most foster children, of course, miss their parents every day. You heard Jolie's words earlier. Her life was turned upside down without her grandmother. Foster kids face a complex mix of uncertainty, loss of control, questions without answers, feelings they can't explain, and all of this is heightened and magnified during the holidays. So these kids are with us for a season. Throughout our lives, each of us finds families with us for a season. And our task during this time of fostering is to offer a safe and comfortable environment for each child. But thanks to my amazing husband and my wonderful 2 children, our goal is much loftier than that. We want to show these precious children what healthy relationships look like. We want to surround them with so much joy and love and fun that their heartbreak and trauma is lessened. We're hoping to prevent lifelong attachment disorders among these young babies and toddlers that we care for. Unlike so many foster children who enter the system at an older age, they're extremely traumatized from years in neglect and abuse. So many of them deal with attachment disorders for the rest of their lives. It affects relationships with every single relationship they have: family members, friends, spouses, bosses, neighbors. To explain this point further, I'd like to read some information related to fostering the developing child found online at harvard.edu. Foster children have typically been exposed to a host of early adverse experiences, such as neglectful and/or abusive care and repeated caregiver disruptions. As a consequence, they demonstrate compromised physical, cognitive, and psychosocial development. In just the first 3 years of life, the foundations for focused learning, trust, social skills, and self-control are formed. Early experiences affect the development of brain architecture, which provides the foundation for all future learning, behavior, and health. Simpler neural connections and skills form first, followed by more complex circuits and skills. In the first few years of life, more than 1 million new neural connections form every second. After this period of rapid proliferation, connections are reduced through a process called pruning. That allows the brain circuits to become more efficient. The interactions of genes and experience shape the developing brain. Although genes provide the blueprint for the formation of brain circuits, these circuits are reinforced by repeated use. A major ingredient in this developmental process is the serve and return interaction between children and their parents and other caregivers. In the absence of responsive caregiving, or if responses are unreliable or inappropriate, the brain's architecture does not form as expected, which can lead to disparities in learning and behavior. The emotional and physical health, social skills, and cognitive linguistic capacities that emerge in the early years are all important for success in school, the workplace, and the larger community. Toxic stress weakens the architecture of the developing brain, which can lead to lifelong problems in learning, behavior, physical, and mental health. End quote. These are the types of articles my husband was reading before he ever mentioned fostering to me, and this is the type of information that led us to decide to foster children ages 3 and under. We feel like this is a critical time where we can make the most difference in their lives to have a lifelong impact on them. Earlier this month, you heard a sermon on the importance of connections and how those connections can reduce mental illness, physical illness, even prevent suicide. Please keep that in mind, that connections message in mind, as I share these statistics from the National Foster Youth Institute. This is about kids who age out of the foster system. That means that on their 18th birthday, they still haven't found a family willing to care for them beyond age 17, haven't made that critical connection. They don't have anyone willing to adopt them or give them permanency. There are about 23,000 kids in the U.S. who age out of the system every year. For these kids who age out of care, 1 in 5 will end up homeless within a year. Only half will be employed by the age of 24. While over 70% want to attend college, 15% will actually take college courses, and less than 3% will graduate with a college degree. One out of every four children who age out of the system will suffer from the direct effects of post-traumatic stress disorder. Half will develop a substance dependence. About 70% of young women who age out of the system become pregnant by the age of 21. 70%. We need to do better for these kids. They enter the system as innocent victims of their parents' bad decisions, unfortunate circumstances. We need to help them break the cycle and ensure that their future will be brighter than their past. We need to keep them off the streets and out of the jails. As a society, we need to do everything we can to set them up for future success. We can do that by expanding our definition of family, by building bigger dinner tables, welcoming them into our homes. We need to allow those desperately looking for family to find us. Nearly every conversation I've had about fostering, no matter how quick the conversation, the other person always mentions attachment. So I need to address that today. Countless people have told me, and perhaps some of you are thinking it right now, I could never foster because I'd become too attached. Don't these children deserve a healthy, loving relationship with someone who's willing to become emotionally attached to them? Someone who views it as a privilege to become attached to them, even if it's temporary. People who would love a child so dearly, who would consider themselves attached, make ideal foster parents. What message are we sending to these innocent and traumatized children if we, as adults in society, tell them we're not willing to share their pain? We're not willing to risk experiencing our own heartbreak to ease theirs. To be honest, saying goodbye is hard, sometimes impossibly hard, and it is a big component of fostering, but it is not the biggest part. The good stuff's in the middle. The love we share, basic nutrition and day-to-day care, the witnessing of milestones and sharing new experiences, brain and physical development that allows these kids to thrive in a safe, loving environment, that's what's important. The lifelong impact that we're making, that's why we do it. So as you encounter foster families in the future, don't ask them about the initial adjustment period or what the parents did wrong or how hard it was to say goodbye. Ask them about that good stuff in the middle. I know we're doing great things for the foster children who come into our home, no doubt, but our family has been equally blessed. I want to talk about a few of the ways that our family has benefited. First of all, perspective. Raise your hand if your kids or grandkids could use a little perspective. Of course, we all face hardships, but an important lesson for our kids is that some basics they take for granted are not available to all children. Clean clothes to wear, food in the pantry, kiss on the forehead as they're tucked into bed, not being beaten every day after school. In addition to giving us this new perspective, fostering has generated great discussions with our children about making smart decisions, healthy decisions for their futures. My kids understand that most children end up in foster care because their parents made poor decisions about drugs or relationships. Being an adult doesn't automatically mean you avoid making mistakes. But my kids understand that there are serious consequences when you make mistakes as an adult. My girls just started middle school in the fall, and now we have a tangible context for open and honest conversations about the dangers of experimenting with drugs and alcohol, about choosing your friends wisely, the dangers of blindly following someone else's lead. They know it isn't right to look the other way when they witness bullying or some other wrongdoing. We will do our part and not assume that someone else will take care of the problem. Obviously, a huge benefit fostering has offered our family is simply the opportunity to affect other people's lives in serious long-term ways. What a privilege. How often in life do we really have that ability to affect such change? The answer is every single day, big ways and small. We all have an important role to play. I know most of you in this congregation are already making positive change in your community, and I thank you for that. Many of you welcome new family into your lives, and I thank you for that. If, however, you have space in your heart or wallet or time in your day, I have information I can give you after the service about a variety of ways you can help local kids who are in foster care, but without becoming licensed to foster in your home. As we wrap up this winter holiday season, and we enter a new year, let's all open our hearts to the possibility of finding new family in 2020. As my husband said to me that very first night we discussed fostering, we have the space, the love, and the resources that these children need. Do you? Thank you, and may you all find peace and continued blessings in the new year.